Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Do you know about the birds and the bees?
I will love you always. I will love you as my queen. And while you live, I will love no other.
You sure know how to romance a girl.
I'm falling in love with you all over again.
I'd like to kiss you, but I just washed my hair.
This is a great day for love.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, the dictionary definition of the word romance goes like this: an ardent emotional attachment between people. Well, that's fascinating, especially if you're a wife who's married to a guy who seems more concerned with the physical aspects of love and romance than he is with the emotional and relational parts. Well, if you're looking to restore that ardent emotional connection with your spouse, I want you to stay with us for the next half hour. Best-selling author and speaker Dennis Rainey is back once again, and we're going to talk about putting passion and romance back into your marriage today on Homeward. So keep it right here.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.
Well, welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns today. Dennis Rainey, once again, putting the passion and the romance back in your marriage. This is kind of part two of a two-part conversation. And Dennis, thanks again for being with us. I appreciate so much all that you do.
Jim, it's great to be with you. It's a relevant topic, isn't it? It's good for our marriages, huh?
It's a good, relevant topic. It really is. Rekindling the romance. I don't know anybody who's married that doesn't want to either rekindle their romance or improve it, or even if they're having some good romance, they still want to improve it. Because
right.
It's much more than sex. But yet us guys oftentimes think about sex, whereas you've said in your book, women talk about relationship. Why is that guys are so focused on sex and not on the relationships?
Well, if you read the Song of Solomon, it doesn't take long as you kind of make your way through both Solomon as he describes the beauty of his bride and as the Shulamite woman describes Solomon. They both focus on different things. The Shulamite, his wife, focused on Solomon's face, his eyes, his countenance, because that's where a relationship takes place.
Right.
She longed to know him and to be connected to him relationally, and she respected him, and she communicated that to him. On the other hand, Solomon starts at her feet, and I don't know, he finally makes it to her head, but he has a couple of spots where he kind of gets sidetracked a bit. And
right.
You know, the reason is I think God unashamedly made men and women differently so that they would need one another. And I think what happens is the needs and the differences that attracted us to one another before we got married can end up repelling us after we get married. In other words, she really liked him paying attention to her and holding her hand and putting his arm around her waist before they were married. And he really enjoyed the attention she gave him and how she affirmed him. But after you get married, you get a couple of kids and there's bills due and there's distractions of email and media and cars breaking down and bills coming due. That drags on a marriage relationship, and we describe these as foxes that break into our marriage and nibble away at the romance before it has a chance to mature.
You know, it seems like one of the issues is communication. You know, so important, and yet a lot of times, if Kathy and I are communicating, then our romance seems to be fine. If we begin fading on the communication style, you know, our romance then sometimes goes too. How do you help men improve in communication? So many people just say men are terrible communicators.
Well, I think guys have to be taught how to love. I look back at how I first loved Barbara, and I didn't know how to romance her. I didn't know how to speak in her language of love in a way that would let her know that she was cherished and nourished and cared for. But I think it begins with commitment. A man has to start by saying to his wife, out of all the women in the world, over 3 billion women, I choose you. You and I for a lifetime. And the man that begins with commitment then needs to get busy in learning some very practical ways on how he can speak to his wife. And I think you mentioned it, Jim. I think it begins by asking questions.
Right.
I asked Barbara, what communicates love to you? And it was working on Saturday around the house. It was helping with the kids, getting ready for bed at night. It was cleaning the kitchen. Now, I don't think any of those things are particularly sexy or romantic. But Barbara...
Right.
did, and Barbara does.
Right.
And what we have to realize is, as men, what we think is attractive may not, and is likely not, what our wives are going to say.
Boy,
is attractive.
That is so key. You'd like a husband being like a gardener, and in some ways, this is what you're talking about. You kind of sow in the garden of your wife's heart.
Right. And you do that with a lot of practical ways. You know, promise keepers. I love to get in front of those men and say, now, let me give you a couple of take-homes to take home to your wife that'll make a huge difference in your marriage and family. In fact, I just did this in Northwest Arkansas to about 23,000 men that were in a stadium there. But I challenged the men to go home and make a commitment to pray every day with their wives. Take their wife's hand, and either in the morning when you get up and you enjoy breakfast together, or as a family, or when you go to bed at night, take your wife's hand and say, sweetheart, I want to pray for you and I want to pray with you. Now, a lot of guys are really threatened by the whole concept of praying with your wife. Right. Now, why is that? Well, it's because they know our Achilles' heels,
exactly.
Numerous weaknesses. We've lived our lives in front of them. But you know what? Our wives don't expect us to be perfect, but they do want us to be spiritual men who care for their souls. And I know of no more practical way to build romance into your wife's life and into your marriage than tonight, to make it the first night of the rest of your marriage. Barbara and I have been doing this for now nearly 33 years. We've prayed every day. We've missed a few over the years, but when we miss a night, we get right back up the next night and keep doing it. And some of those nights, it's not a long prayer. It's a Lord, we're exhausted. Good night. Amen. But other nights, it's been agony praying for our kids or with our kids or about something troubling us in our marriage and family. Those are the issues that build relationship and ultimately cultivate romance.
What's fascinating about it is here we are talking about romance, but we're also talking about praying regularly because it is a proven fact. In fact, Charlie Shedd, who's now passed on, but one of the early writers in family life, said that you can celebrate in the bedroom if you've prayed together on your knees. Mm-hmm. And when I first read that, I thought, well, that's an oxymoron. And now I understand that to be something that brings intimacy together. And when you have communication, when you have intimacy, then your romance is going to be so much better.
Most of the women listening to this broadcast who are married long.
That's right.
They long for their husbands to just lead in the most fundamental, basic way spiritually. And I just want to say a word to the guys who are listening. If you want to knock it out of the park with your wife, go home and make tonight the first night of the rest of your marriage. And the reason this is so powerful is because if you invite God and His presence into your marriage daily for the rest of your married life and family, you will not be the same 20 years from today. You'll not be the same 2 years from today. I've had men come up to me and said nothing that they've ever done in the history of their marriage has so radically transformed their relationship than daily prayer together as a couple.
Absolutely. Now, as you've studied your wife and studied other couples, you've discovered that there are at least three non-negotiables for a romantically satisfying relation. Talk to us about these three.
Well, a woman has a great need for security. She needs to know you're committed.
And it's not about $1 million in a bank account.
No. It's about emotional security. There's not a man alive who, if there was an intruder broke in their house, wouldn't pick up a ball bat and go after him. He wouldn't hand the ball bat to his wife and say, it's your turn, sweetheart. I did it last time.
Right.
No, he would go protect her. And when a man makes a commitment to create that security by covenant-keeping love, he's keeping intruders out of his home. Secondly, she wants acceptance. She wants to know that she's loved in spite of. That you as her husband know her best and you love her the most. And third, she's wanting an emotional connection. One of the things Barbara really likes is just taking a walk. Let's go for a walk together. And so over the years in raising our kids knew when I got home from work, Mom and Dad would go out in the yard and we'd go look at the same old dumb flower beds and walk around and look at some of the work that needed to be done outside. But we'd decompress. We'd talk about the day. And she'd get a chance to offload about this child or that child that was driving her crazy during those years. But she needed to know she was connected to her husband.
Good thoughts. Security, acceptance, and emotional connection. Those are things we can work on. A lot more we can work on. We'll be right back when we come back. I'm going to actually ask Dennis about the difference between a good husband and a McDonald's sales strategy. And we'll be right back. I'm Jim Burns, and you're listening to Homeward.
And you're listening to a special edition of the Homeward Broadcast. Roger Marsh here, back in the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University. You know, for the sixth consecutive year, the Princeton Review named APU one of the best colleges in the West in its 2012 Best Colleges Rankings, and it's a great place to be. Proud to be a member of the student body right now in the Bachelor of Science in Organizational Leadership program that's going to be wrapping up next year sometime. And Jim Burns, of course, an APU alum as well. We're talking about restoring passion in your marriage, and we'll have more of Jim's conversation with Dennis Rainey on the other side of this break as Homeward continues.
I'm Jim Burns, and for our Homeward snapshot, I want to talk about six keys to a better marriage today. Joining me here in studio are Bill and Debbie Davis.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
Okay, Bill and Debbie, when was the last time the two of you had a date night?
A date night?
We don't date, Jim. We're married.
Right, okay. Well, next question. When was the last time you took a vacation together, just the two of you?
Oh, come on, Jim. Is it really that important? I mean, you know, we're both so busy with work and the kids. Who has time for that stuff?
Well, I think it's very important, and every marriage needs some one-on-one nourishment to stay healthy.
And now that you mention it, there is that really cute bed and breakfast that I've always wanted to go to.
There is? I didn't even know.
I guess we never really talked about it much.
But you're talking now, and that's the main thing. And don't forget saying those three little words that are so powerful in a marriage.
Dinner was great?
No, silly. I love you.
Oh, well, I love you too.
This marriage is looking better already, and if you'd like my free tip sheet called Six Keys to a Better Marriage today, go to homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns. Welcome back to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Today, Dennis Rainey again. We're talking about putting the passion and the romance back in your marriage. In the previous program, we talked a little bit more about wives and what they can do. Today, we're kind of picking on the husbands a little bit. Us husbands, we need coaching.
We get a toolbox for the husbands coming up.
Absolutely.
Some practical tips on how they can create romance for their marriage.
Absolutely. And I was taking notes on it as I was reading this book. But at the first, I want to ask you about this because I thought it was kind of fun. I want to ask you simply the question, what does a good husband have to do with this McDonald's sales strategy? What do they have in common?
Well, when you step up to McDonald's counter and you place your order, after you've placed your order, what's the next question they ask? Do you want to supersize it?
Absolutely.
And that simple question has resulted into literally tens of millions of dollars as they sell us bigger Cokes, more fries, and bigger burgers. What McDonald's was doing is actually becoming a student of the customer. And as a result of asking the question, that increased their profitability. Well, a husband who's really astute about his wife, she is his closest neighbor. She is his most important customer. Meeting her needs and caring for her. If you read Ephesians chapter 5, where men are commanded to nourish and cherish their wives as Christ loved the church, we need to pay attention to their needs. And so I think it's time for husbands to develop lists of what would communicate romance and love and emotional connection with their wives. I created such a list for Barbara. And when I would get stumped sometimes in knowing how to love her and how to communicate, I would go to that list. I kept it in my wallet for a number of years. And it would just have practical things in there. Run the sweeper, you know, help with the laundry, turn off the TV and put the kids to bed. You know, some of the practical aspects of loving your spouse, asking her questions. What are your greatest fears, your greatest concerns, your greatest worries? What are your greatest dreams? What are the horizons? I think those things are statements of value to your wife that say to her, you know what, I love you, and I want to build into our relationship.
I think there's a lot of wives who say, my husband doesn't know. And so the wife has to tell the husband, and the husband has to tell the wife how they can benefit each other, don't they?
They do. And there's nothing wrong with pulling out a pencil and a piece of paper and going on a date. Barbara and I would have a date night on Sunday nights, standing date. And we went to a church that didn't have Sunday night church, and so I'm convinced it's how our marriage survived, right? That we had a chance, yeah, once a week to connect emotionally, to talk about this child or that group of children that we were struggling with as we raised them, because raising children today is an all-out effort if you're doing it right. But we also had a chance to ask one another, where are you right now? Where are you struggling? I know this may sound a bit shocking perhaps to some of your listeners, but on more than one occasion, Barbara would ask me how I'm doing. I'm saying, well, I just need to tell you, sweetheart, I've been struggling with lust as a man. And I need you as my wife and my partner to know that. And on more than one occasion, Barbara would share with me how her disappointment in a child and a child that wasn't doing well for a period of time. And if you have six children, you go through the teenage years, you know, Jim, you're an expert on teen relationships. It's hard to raise a child through the teen years. They're going to be casualties along the way and losses. Well, moms absorb that far greater in their hearts than do fathers. And at those moments, a husband needs to come alongside his wife and put his arm around her and pray with her and pray for that child and also provide some love.
Right, and that's why they cannot be just child-focused, or what's going to happen during those years is they're going to spread apart as a couple because they're so focused on the children, because you can be mad at a teenager 24 hours a day. You can find something to get angry with about.
Right.
Sometimes that anger transfers over to a marriage relationship and the marriage begins to fade. Most of my friends say that some of the hardest years for their marriage has been when they've had teenagers in the home.
I would say that the teenage years were the most challenging for us, even more than when we had the toddlers.
Yeah.
We had four teenagers at once. And the one who bears the greatest brunt of a teenage boy's anger, of a sassy teenage girl spouting off, is who, Jim?
It's the woman. It's
the mom.
Absolutely.
And moms suffer terribly. And I don't remember who it was exactly who said it to us early on, but it was so helpful for me to know, as Barbara's friend and as her partner in life, to know that she was going to suffer as a mom in ways that I didn't. And for me to come alongside her during those years, because at points, it's war.
Right.
It's war to raise a child to adulthood.
It is. And you know, I don't think people tell us that enough. And that's why I'm so glad that you're mentioning that. Not easy necessarily, but very, very important. As you were talking, we mentioned that you have a chapter in your book called Rekindling the Romance, where there are 30 ideas on how to really better love your wives. You put this together, and I thought this was very, very practical, very helpful. Why don't you give us a couple of those?
Okay. Kiss her and hug her every morning before leaving the house. And it's interesting, there's actually research that's been done on marriages where if this simple discipline occurs on a regular basis, those relationships will be far healthier than just two people heading in their own directions to start their day. Write her a note and say, I'm crazy about you, or you're the best, or I'd marry you all over again. That's one of my favorite notes to Barbara. Barbara was gone before I recently took a trip, and I left a little note underneath her pillow at home that she would get when she got back, even though I wasn't there, just to let her know that I'd missed her and I appreciated her. Call her from work and say, I've been thinking about how good I have it because of you in my life.
Mm.
Words are powerful,
sure.
Very powerful. Brush her hair and compliment her hair and her eyes. Tell her what you like best about her and your relationship. Call her, send her an email mid-afternoon, and ask her how her day's going. Now, that's a good one.
Right.
Just say, what's going on? And she may write you back and say, what do you want?
Right.
I think one of the most powerful ways a man can show his love for his wife is when he makes a mistake, when he's selfish, when he's said an unkind word or gotten angry, as I have on more than one occasion, is ask her forgiveness. In Barbara's half of the book, she tells a story that occurred right after Barbara had nearly died, with her heart rate going up to over 300 beats a minute. And a friend of ours gave us an all-expense-paid trip to Mazatlan, Mexico. So here Barbara and I were in the most romantic spot, right on the beach with a balcony wrapping around our room, and there was a thunderstorm out over the ocean, and there was music coming up through the veranda, and it was a magnificent evening. We'd had a great time. We'd been dancing together in the evening. And yet, Jim, I got so ticked off at Barbara because we couldn't experience romance that I threw a bottle of hand lotion through a small plate glass window. Well, that evening ended with her crying, me crying, and ultimately me cradling her face in my hand, saying to her, Barbara Rainey, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? I want you to know that even if we never have sex again, we're not able to do what I want to do, I promise to love you. And Barbara wrote in her part of the book, she said, no gift of any price could have meant more.
Yeah.
Now, personally, I'm not proud of that story. But we wrote about that story and told that story in great detail because I think that's real. That's real family life. That's where people live. Romance isn't always on the balcony,
right,
with the soft June breeze blowing in your face. Mm-hmm. Romance is taking place in the midst of real families that have real issues, that have lots of challenges, and not to mention that you're a man and a woman and you're very different.
You have a great story about some roses and how that changed the life of some people and then now continues to change the life of people.
Well, we were at one of our arena events called I Still Do a number of years ago, and I believe it was Cincinnati, and I noticed there were some roses at the base of the podium, and I thought, you know, I'm going to take those roses home to Barbara. And then I thought, no, there's probably somebody here in this arena that needs a rose. And so when I got up to speak to conclude the arena event, they had about 12,000 people at it, I held a rose up and I said, if there's a man who needs to come get this rose from me and whose marriage was over when you came to this event, I want you to come down here and get one of these roses. And we had about 3 dozen roses, as I recall, at that event. And no sooner than the words had left my mouth than I saw a guy coming down, hitting about every third step of that arena, and the audience began to clap for him. And he steps up there at the base of the podium, begins to tug at a rose, and he heads back off resolutely. And I'm told when he got back up near the top where his wife was seated, she met him halfway in the row, almost in midair. Well, what was amazing was those 3 dozen roses were gone in less than 60 seconds. So the next time we had 12 dozen roses, and they lasted 90 seconds. And the next time we had 400 roses, and they lasted 2 minutes. So finally I said, we're going to take 1,000 roses. And an event in Southern California, in less than 5 minutes, 1,000 roses were gone. And you know what that tells me? It tells me that there are a lot of marriages hanging by a thread that need a rose of reconciliation. They need a husband or a wife to say, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? We need to make our marriage work because a lot is at stake. When a marriage dies, it's not just a marriage that passes away. It's a family. Your marriage is worth it.
Mm. Fabulous. Dennis, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
Dennis Rainey, talking about putting passion and romance back into your marriage. I love that rose story. Well, this should be a priority in your marriage, and here's Roger now to tell you about how you can get a couple of these resources to help you start down the path.
Well, the resources that we offer so often, Jim, are tried and true, true and tested. The book, Creating an Intimate Marriage, that Dr. Jim Burns wrote a couple of years ago, there's a very comprehensive curriculum that goes along with this, too. You and your spouse can work through the book together, just the two of you, or you can use it in a couples group, a Bible study if you want. We've got other curriculum resources that go along with this as well, and you'll find complete ordering information at homeward.com. Also, the devotional book that Jim and Kathy Burns have written called Closer. If you are a married couple who is looking for a way to do kind of weekly devotions but haven't found a book that works for you, Closer is that resource. And you can order a copy of Closer and Creating an Intimate Marriage from our Homeward Online Resource Center. And when you do, a portion of the proceeds from both books goes to supporting our ministry. So thanks for keeping that in mind as you make your purchasing decision at homeward.com. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer near Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.